your computer's online. Archiving 44K. Initiate sequence.
T minus 30 seconds.
Server connection confirmed.
T minus 25 seconds.
Live stream for T1 at 20K.
T minus 20 seconds.
Phone lines are go.
T minus 15 seconds.
Satellite uplink verified.
T minus 10 seconds.
Flight check complete. Satellite uplink verified.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Black Op Radio, the voice of political conspiracy research. You're listening to Black Op Radio, the show NSA doesn't want you to hear. Now here is your host, Leno Sanic.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Black Op Radio. We are going to be speaking to Professor Denton and about his upcoming conference. So, hello, David.
Lynn, how are you doing?
Good.
Great to be on board today.
Okay, good. I saw that you had a promotional poster going out for upcoming conference, and I thought, well, I'm only too glad to help people doing what I consider good work. I agree with the speakers or don't agree with them, but, you know, I'm happy to promote people going in the right direction.
Well, that's the important thing. I mean, I think there is some division in the JFK community. That would be an understatement, right? But the so-called...
I guess, yeah, the surprising thing, you kind of join, you think, oh, here's all my friends, we're going to all agree. And then you get in there and go, oh, that's... You know, I can go on to many things. But yeah, lots of people don't agree.
A lot of food fights going on, but at the same time, I think we all have to remember that for the most part, all of us have this common goal of getting to, you know, truth and justice associated with the JFK assassination. And obviously, we also look at the RFK and MLK assassinations as well, the 1960s, that justice really hasn't prevailed in those events. And we're truth seekers now.
Right. Well, let's back up. Tell me a little bit about your organization, and then we'll talk about the upcoming conference.
Yeah, okay. Well, I am basically the head of the JFK Historical Group, which is just basically a small group of individuals that like-minded in terms of primarily promoting conferences that we've done around the country, particularly in Dallas. I myself have personally been involved with a lot of archival research, especially in recent years, and done a lot of work with the, you know, documents out of the National Archives. And also, I've been, obviously, as I said, central part of putting together conferences. We also collaborate with another great group Conference LLC, which we kind of inherited the conference that we run ourselves the last 5 years from them. They still collaborate with us. And then great group Project JFK, which is Brian Edwards, Casey Quinlan, David Knight, three great researchers out of Kansas City. That done a lot of great work. Dave Knight in particular helps me kind of co-run the conference, and especially with all the technical video aspects. And we feel like we're a pretty good team. We've run some really excellent conferences in Dallas and other places, and look forward to doing another good one this year.
Now, with your guest speakers, generally what is the topic and format? Because is it always JFK, or is there other things that you mentioned?
Well,
RFK, or
again, we try to set some parameters. Basically, the JFK assassination is our major topic, and it's a historical topic. We don't want to bleed too much into so much current events or other things, you know, or other conspiratorial things. I mean, a lot of folks see conspiracy in a lot of places, you know, whether it's vaccines or 9/11 or, I mean, and those things I'm not going to have any comments on, because that's not our charge. We're interested in our historical past associated with the events of the 1960s and how these political assassinations changed America, you know, in an unjust fashion. Now, we have, obviously, you know, there's a lot of, as we just started off, Lynn, we, you know, how people have some very different views about what went down in Dallas. I think we're generally in agreement, especially those that we invite to speak. We're not lone nutters. And we're not inviting lone nutters. You're not going to see Gerald Posner at our conference. and yet, when we go from there, I think it's easy to spend a little time, as I tell my college students, I'm like, well, I can take about 20 minutes and I can lay out for you a strong case to show the impossibility of Lee Harvey Oswald acting alone or in fact at all. Now, the harder part is how do we pursue the truth? What areas we look at, different theories about different folks involved or different institutions. Well, we run the conference that same way. We give opportunities for different people with different viewpoints about what direction we should look at. We don't try to, unless it's something that we feel like is just too far out on the fringe,
No,
but
fair enough. And I think what happens is when people look into the John F. Kennedy assassination, and then they put it up against the Warren Commission and Lyndon Johnson and Allen Dulles, and then you go back and you look, is that the investigation, the conclusion is not even supported by what they found. And you really get your eyes open to, well, like Oliver Stone said, black is white and white is black. I mean, they've been lying about stuff. And I think that's when you get into when you mentioned 9/11 or vaccines. First glance, you go, well, no, the government wouldn't kill their own president, would they, right? And then you go, my God, they did. And you look into Martin Luther King or Bobby Kennedy. And then when something new comes up, like I'll say maybe in Pittsburgh there, the Trump assassination attempt, you go, well, is there something suspicious to that? You might be a little more open than most to say, okay, show me what you got. So that's how I think a lot of people in this community will have these varying views because
Exactly.
they had their world turned upside down to start with, and they go, okay, from now on, I'm not ruling anything out.
You're going to be more cynical about what you're being told about supposedly what happened by the media or our government. There's no question. And I think we all should be. We all should be question that, not take things at face value. I mean, the whole thing in Pittsburgh, yeah, I kind of think, man, right off the bat, I said something smells here. But again,
Right, I didn't mean to get into that, so we'll leave that alone. But
no, I
like
mean,
that's, yeah.
and I, you know, but at the same point time, we're not going to spend a lot of time on that down in Dallas. That's my point. I am totally open to individuals who want to look in those directions and explore those things, because I think we've gotten to a point. You know this that. It doesn't take very long to listen to mainstream media, and the term conspiracy is always associated with somebody who's making shit up, right? And that's not always the case. You always have to look in every situation for the facts of conspiracy. And you and I both know the facts of conspiracy are overwhelming in the JFK case and really in the MLK, RFK cases as well. So
Yeah.
that's how I should, that's, I think, the nuanced way that we all should take a look at conspiracy, not be
Or even,
led
I try to
astray
use,
by,
sorry, I try to use the word political research because conspiracies, like you said, it's been tied to something like you're looking for Bigfoot or whatever. But in the political research, you're going, I think they got away with it. And they got away with it again. And they'll keep doing it. So now what you have as a scholarly effort of investigation, where you're inviting speakers, researchers, authors together to say, here's what we found, and you're going to have each guest on a topic. And yeah, I just was asking you, offhand that, okay, you cover JFK, but will there be any other things at the conference? But it's mostly JFK. And just to start with, do you have a website people can go to
Oh,
pick
yeah.
up?
JFKhistorical.com.
Very good.
It's right on the homepage. I've got one of my latest articles, which I think is kind of exemplifies what we're trying to do in Dallas in terms of new research. My article covers a fat, fascinating group of documents that were just released last year about JFK's creating of a foreign intelligence advisory board after the Bay of Pigs to kind of what can we do to rein in and reform the CIA. And there were a whole series of meetings that were releasing these declassified documents, and boy, are they eye-opening about what they wanted to try to do with the CIA and ultimately failed to do because of the assassination of JFK. And then almost a change of course after the assassination event. So that's an example of the kind of research that we try to bring out. A lot of things have come out in the new documents like that, and a lot of opportunities. There's all, you know, it's amazing for something that happened 62, 63 years ago, Lynn, that there's still things that are eye-opening that are coming out. And we try to emphasize at our conference to kind of stay away from the same old, if we can dig a little deeper, find something new or something to add to what we already know. That's really our emphasis down there in Dallas in our conference. And we have some great researchers that will be there to do that. But also on the on my website, our website, if you click on conference at the top, it will take you to all the important information about signing up and hotel information and scheduling and whatnot. So I invite folks to take a serious look and consider coming to Dallas November 19th through 22nd. Great event, great camaraderie, and an opportunity to come down to Dallas, Texas, where all these things went down.
And you have the whole catalog there of speakers and the times and the various topics, so people can go through that. And it's been said many times that if you go to a conference, sometimes the most interesting things are the conversations at lunchtime or in the hallways. You're having a coffee with somebody, and you connect with another researcher, and then that's what really makes going to a conference worthwhile.
Because, I agree totally. I mean, we're still, I mean, we have our speaking lineup pretty much, a group of speakers pretty much lined up and attacked. We should be releasing we try not to get in a hurry on releasing the actual schedule because we have things come up, people can't make it, changes have to be made, somebody pops up on the radar, and we have to constantly amend the schedule that we put out. So we're not quite ready to send out our quote-unquote official schedule, but we are releasing our names of individuals that are going to be at the event.
Okay, yeah, tentatively, right.
Yeah, yeah. And that's pretty well cut and dried at this point. But, yeah, we always want to allow folks to have some time. We usually try to cut out some time in the, you know, some conferences will run out to like 10:30 at night every night, 8 in the morning, and kind of wear everybody out. We try to, at least for our first two or three nights, we try to leave some evening time open where people can have that kind of camaraderie in the hallways that you talked about, and connect with other like-minded people and talk to speakers and so on. So, yeah, that's part of it as well, as you said.
Okay, so is there a main theme for this conference, for this one? I mean, other than JFK.
Yeah, well, our title is called JFK Assassination, Why It Still Matters, Pursuing Justice and Historical Truths. And there's a lot. We spend a lot of time thinking about what we want our title of our event to be and try to kind of hold to that. But in essence, that's what we're trying to demonstrate, that yes, the JFK assassination still matters. And though I just spoke earlier that, hey, we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on current events, I suppose, since it's a historical thing, yet what, you know, and you teach this in your classroom as well, as a college professor, history professor, you know that there, all these things that happened in our past certainly have a impact on what's going on now. You know, where people can see that connection, see how did the JFK assassination impact our lives in such a dramatic way. You know, I think that's why it still matters. And then the pursuing justice and historical truths, Well, that's just an emphasis on new research. We try to put a place on that, folks that, again, we have us. Do we have all the documents from the National Archives or various places? No, we've got a lot of it, but we haven't gotten it all yet. But there's still a lot to look at. From what's been released in the last 7 or 8 years, I spent a lot of time looking at one Bill William Harvey from the CIA, written about it. Dealt with a lot of documents associated with Harvey. We did a FOIA on him and got 400 pages from the CIA a few years ago. Really taking a granular look at one of the most suspicious people associated with this case, William Bill Harvey. And that's the kind of thing we expect out of all our speakers, that to dig deeper, look into these things, give us more truth. We already have a lot of truth, give folks, and if you've got an argument, because there's things that folks are, again, you've looked on the internet, probably, I'm sure enough, to see a lot of the arguments that ensue on a lot of things, and some of it is kind of minutia, I mean, like, in some respects, I don't want to disrespect people, but you got folks that argue about, was the guy in the door Billy Lovelady or Lee Harvey Oswald? To what extent and to what direction, if any, was the Zapruder film altered? I mean, or different individuals like James Files, is he legitimate or not, or is he a phony? I'm just giving you examples how we kind of have to walk the line a little bit, because we want to allow folks to have discussions about things like this, but we don't want it to consume us, right? Isn't it? And I think we get so caught up in the arguments and the minutiae as a JFK research community, and we got to try to pull a tough balancing act there, but we do
Yeah, well,
try to
just a
plow.
second ago, you
Yeah.
mentioned James, right? What was it about him that caught your attention?
Bill Harvey.
Oh yeah, Bill Harvey. So,
Yeah.
well, all those guys. But anyway, yeah, what was it about Bill Harvey then that caught your attention?
Well, he, looking, and again, the article that I have released on him that covers my last 7 or 8 years of research, and has really been focused on what's in the National Archives. I mean, I've tried to just stick to that almost exclusively. And it does paint a picture of somebody who was an ideal character who fit the role in almost every way of someone who could have at least carried out the mechanical aspects of the JFK assassination. He told him, when you look at a murder, right, you look at means, motive, and opportunity, right? Well, means, motive, and opportunity is all there with William Bill Harvey. He was described as a real life James Bond in his day, and he was, in many ways, the documents bear that out. Also, they bear out a guy who had did a lot of over the top controversial things, even within the CIA. His personnel file suggests, in a kind of a euphemistic way, that he was willing to go rogue. I think the quote from the documents are, he was willing to go beyond even his superior officers in things. Well, that means he was willing to go rogue, especially during the Cuban Missile Crisis, when he sent teams of agents in there basically to try to start World War III during the Cuban Missile Crisis. He even pissed off a lot of the people in the agency, like your friend, I think you spent a lot of time on, Mr. Ed Lansdale, who pretty much condemned, I didn't say your friend because I know you've looked at Lansdale a lot, but Lansdale even condemned Harvey after his action. He said that, he's fallen on his sword, and he gets exiled basically to the Rome's as Rome's station chief. He's in, but there he's in a perfect position to probably be involved, and was involved with, obviously, the executive action, which is a program of assassination, and in a position and did recruit foreign assassins. A lot of folks, you know, and he had a group of officers loyal only to him. He hated the Kennedys. His wife, on a video tape that was released before her death, said that Bill Harvey thought the Kennedys were scum. That was her quote. And he, you know, the suggestion, I think a lot of evidence, and some people have looked at this, you know, with others have done research besides me, that there's a growing body of evidence that Harvey may well have traveled back to the United States unannounced, in secret, prior to the assassination, which would really raise the suspicion level, I think, with Harvey. He's certainly a guy who fits the model in a lot of ways in terms of who you're looking for, who possibly could have logistically put this thing together in some respects. I mean, that's in a summary how I
or been very cooperative with whoever was also doing that. So
yeah,
that,
you know,
okay, I mean, I'm in, you know, what do you need? All right, I'll help.
Yeah. I mean, Harvey would have been the guy to go to. I mean, if you wanted to carry something this out such as this, and if you feel like more powerful forces were at work here, which I do, I think those powerful forces could have turned to someone like Bill Harvey to manage this whole operation, or at least be a central part of it, I think.
Right. And with Bill Harvey, though, my question was just trying to be, was there one thing that was a catalyst? Was there, were you reading and you came across something and you went, wait a minute, this isn't right. I've got to investigate this. Like, I mean, I think it was his number two associate that said, I met him at the airport and he said he was in Dallas, you know, just
yeah,
right before.
Yeah, that story there. And,
yeah,
you know, well, for me, it comes, those things have recently come out. Again, I think primarily it's the things I put together from his personnel file, you know, it just, I can recall, I mean, a lot of it came out in 2017. And I first got my hands on his personnel file, I think within that a year, and it just jumped out at me like, oh my God, this guy just in every way. And it was actually the CIA itself was with their classified personnel files and chronological things that Harvey took, you know, that Harvey was engaged in, it just painted a picture that this guy is also suspicious. It's also interesting with Harvey about sometimes it's in some of these characters that we look at, is associated with potentially this event. You got to look how they went out. What happened to them on the end run? And Harvey was an alcoholic. He went downhill. The agency had a problem with him. He gives an oh-so-important interview to the church committee in 1976, which also released documents where the Harvey's pressed by House Committee interviewers about his connection with Q.J. Wynn, that mysterious figure that might have been came to the United States, code name, maybe potential assassin. And Harvey's a very elusive in his interview with the Congressional Committee, but ultimately, when pressed about the assassination of Lumumba, the African leader in 1960, and his potential engagement there with Q.J. Wynn, he kind of blurts out in the interview about, hey, if you really want to assassinate somebody, you just need one person to carry the thing out, to conduct the operation, kill the person, bury the body. That's a quote from Bill Harvey that just jumped out at me in the documents. Like, he's just saying, here, you want to know how to kill somebody? Here it is. That kind of thing, like, wow. I mean, it on Harvey's way out, I think the CIA was very concerned about what he might talk about. They made a point where they had an exit interview with Bill Harvey with the I believe this chief, the second in command of the CIA, Assistant Director. I thought that highly unusual. I thought, you know, Harvey was a mid-level CIA agent. Was it really necessary for the CIA to have a quote-unquote exit interview with a guy that was not at the top of the CIA? What were they worried about? And then I came across a letter afterwards where Bill Helms, now head of the CIA, congratulates Harvey afterwards for his loyalty, quote-unquote, to the agency. I kind of feel like the agency got together with Bill Harvey and said, we know you're a drunk, you know you're going downhill, but keep your damn mouth shut. And Harvey agreed to do that. Those are all some interesting things that come out of the documents I think folks would appreciate if they took the look at them. But, yeah, Harvey's an interesting character, and I've spent a lot of time looking at him.
Okay, so what are some of the topics and some of the speakers that you can just give a quick overview and talk people into
I mean,
it?
We've got 18 or 20 speakers lined up, so I may not want to just ramble through everybody, but I want to, you know, I hope folks, if I don't mention them, will be upset about it, but I'll try to give you some names. Chad Nagel, who's one of the newer guys that's come on the scene. Chad's done a lot of writing with Substack, with Jeff Morley's, I think JFK Matters site. I mean, it was a Substack site, JFK Facts. Yeah, has done a lot of good work, a lot of writing about, again, Harvey and Dave Morales. He's going to be there. Authors like Jeff Meek, Larry Rivera, who's an excellent all-around researcher, wrote multiple volumes, done work on both the documents and a lot of the ballistics and science aspects. Brian Edwards, who's a terrific longtime researcher with Project JFK, who was featured in Oliver Stone's recent documentaries, done a lot of excellent research. Casey Quinlan, a longtime teacher like me, who's been on this case for 40 years and always presenting good research. Another new individual, Matt Armstrong, who's got a good following on X, and professor from North Carolina A&T, doing a lot of good work. He's got a book called, I think, Murder Most Foul, coming out by the end of the year. He's kind of looked at the Texas angle a little bit, kind of give that perspective. Dory Wiley, who's really got into this, and who's actually a well-known investor in the state of Texas, who's really done a lot of excellent research and been involved in her. He gave an excellent presentation on the JFK in Vietnam. He's going to probably do some follow-up work with that. Let's see, Mal Hyman, another professor from South Carolina, has done a lot of work with the media in his treatment of the JFK assassination. Jess Connell, who's done great work reviewing different books and has an excellent YouTube following. She's kind of a new person to the scene. We try to bring a lot of newer folks in with our regulars. Gary Fan, an excellent researcher, got a new book coming out. He's looked at he's got his hands on the daily diaries of Lyndon Johnson and his meetings and the things leading up to the assassination and put people he was meeting with, things he was doing. He's probably talking about that. We're very hopeful of getting Tosh Plumlee, who is an intriguing, maybe controversial character, who, you know, his storyline has been, who's still alive. I think he's 88 years old. He just had a book come out about his entire story. He was a CI mercenary pilot who suggests he was flew in an abort team the day of the assassination. A lot of people have known about Plumlee for a long time. He was interviewed by the House Committee in the 1970s. We're hopeful that we'll be able to get him there. We're still working on that. Larry Schnapp, who you might remember his name, he's been heavily involved. He is the lawyer most associated with trying to pry free a lot of the documents and working with the Congress in terms of what's released. He's an excellent legal analyst of the entire case. Larry will be with us. David Knight, who's done a lot of excellent research and on ballistics, who's also running our video and things. Gary Shaw, longtime veteran researcher. We're hoping and pretty certain that he'll be with us again, legendary researcher. So you can see, man, we got a good lineup. And that's not that, that's just an inkling of it. There's more than that.
But, right, good. And so I'll make a link to the website where people can keep up to date. And, you know, it's only July right now, but like you say, if you do a bit of promotion now, people will plan, okay, well, in the fall, maybe this is what I'll do. I'll have to check out, is there a deal for a hotel? Can I register, pre-register?
Yeah, all that stuff will be, again, they want to go to my website and that they need to click on conference. That's the key tab at the top that takes you to all the pertinent information that they need to know.
Now, you mentioned that you are the Historical Society, but yet there is a buzz about the Luna Committee, which is in the present now, but still digging up documents from the past. Are you optimistic that that she'll get make any headway with any documents or accountability?
Well, obviously, I mean, I know Jefferson Morley. You know, he's in fact that the article that he published for me here last year on Substack about the advisory board, he was kind of heavily involved with the editing of that process. And Morley's been, you know, trying to engage with Luna. I mean, I just feel like it's a mixed bag. I mean, there's politics involved. I mean, Luna, I mean, she's been helpful in trying to expose things. At the same time, though, I think her politics are definitely not my politics. I mean, she's out there on some things. And so, I mean, and then she jumps into some other areas what they get done. I mean, they're wrapping things up and they're planning on, and Morley's supposed to write a report, and what that report will entail, it's hard to say. You get differing opinions about whether or not, I mean, some are saying, well, they've pretty much released everything that's there to be released. Others feel like, no, we're not done. This is not a done deal yet. So I'd say my take on it, it's going to be a mixed bag. I mean,
nope, honest answer. You know,
yeah,
the trouble is, as a researcher and someone interested in the topic, all of a sudden you get your hopes up. You go, oh, you know, this time they'll get stuff for sure. And then as you get in, they go, wait, how come you don't ask? Why not? And then you go, if I was doing it, right? But that's what happens. I mean, with day one, Oliver Stone was there, and I think there was quite a bit of optimism. And now, well, it seems to be like, I hope something comes of it.
Here's the thing. My approach has always been a measured approach, that you have to be in this thing for the long run. You can't, I think the cool thing was in the past year or two, man, you've got a whole new group of people engaged. And then you go on social media and the level of engagement, like on X and places like that, I mean, you got a whole new group of people who are dug into this case. They're involved with it. But at the same time, I think what's come with that was a lot of impatience too, that, or expect, well, where's it at? Where, you know, all the people when the big batches were coming out last spring, everybody was diving in, looking at this, looking at here, we got this. Where's that? You know, what's this going to all lead to? What happened? Well, that's just not how it's going to play out. You're not going to wake up one day and the government of the United States is going to have a big, big ass press conference saying, well, so-and-so did it. We were wrong. I mean, it's got to be more of a methodical process. My answer would be, what happened last year with the release of the documents? It moved the needle, Chad, or Lynn, excuse me. It moved the needle. And as we have to keep moving the needle. That's all I can say. And pushing forward. And it may not be in our lifetimes. You know, I always bring up the story about, you know, I'm a history guy. I bring up the story about Eleanor Roosevelt, who was probably the finest first lady we ever had. I mean, she was there for 16 years when when FDR was president. And she did so many things to improve democracy and fight for lost causes or the underdogs. One of the things Eleanor Roosevelt always fought for or pushed back against was the taking Japanese Americans and throwing them into you want to call them concentration camps, being World War II. It was one of the biggest atrocities committed by the American government. I mean, well, you could argue that, right? And she kind of stood alone against that, during the war fever at the beginning of World War II. And she was like a voice crying, we can't do this. We can't do this to American citizens. And nobody listened to her at the time. But years later, Eleanor Roosevelt died in 1962. In 1988, enough of a push was done, especially by Japanese Americans, to get the government of the United States to recognize and apologize for that wrong, to right a wrong, to correct our history. She didn't live to see it. And this reason why I'm telling this story is we might not live to see it either, Lynn, but we keep pushing. Maybe at some point, someday, somebody, will open up an American history book and say, you know what, this is the part of our past that we have to come to grips with. This is what happened in Dallas, not the crap about Lee Harvey Oswald acting alone. And that's all we can push for, that's my spiel.
It's a shame that as a concerned citizen, and this is this ad hoc association of people that are just got together because they have this concern, that every agency of the American government has been fighting against them and not releasing documents, dragging everything out, redacting. Well, we released them. Yeah, but they're all redacted. Some of those pages are completely black.
So, yeah, I've seen that. I mean, and that's just the resistance that you get from bureaucratic structures who always have a tendency to, I teach sociology too, so this is a little sociology here, but bureaucracies always close ranks. They always defend, even it's like a knee-jerk reaction. Even though they may not have been directly involved in what happened in Dallas anymore, there's going to be a knee-jerk reaction to protect those institutions against embarrassment, and that's all what you have to fight up against,
And that will be the lesson, I think, for people who take this on like a university course, that the government will not reveal, even if it's out of embarrassment, their involvement. And if they say, we weren't involved in the crime, but we're sure not going to reveal it because it would cast America in a light we don't want the rest of the world to see, that you're just as bad as everyone else.
This is the JFK assassination, in some respects, is a big part about, whether we're a democracy or not. Because, we like to, in the era of Trump and his deconstruction of many democratic elements in this country and our fears of where that's going to lead, and yet we still want to hold on to these things. You live in Canada. You're supposed to have a democracy. But how hard it is to maintain that, because, in Putin's Russia, you can just tell people whatever they want. The truth is not important. It's just what we tell you is the truth, or 1984, Orwellian. But in a democracy, you need to get to the bottom of things. You need to reveal justice as much as you can if you want to maintain that democracy, if you want to have any credibility of being a country that espouses to be democratic or, equality and things like that. So, I mean, that's what elevates the importance of this story, even 62, 63 years later, in my opinion.
And then the realization is that this group of powerful people who are running things, if they can remove the president, well, we're all in trouble because they removed him and they got away with it.
I think that's what it's almost that's I think that's the epiphany that all of us, like yourself, myself, who are heavily engaged in this, at some point when we first at some point we got into this. I mean, for me it was 1988. I don't know when it was for you. I mean, for 19, I read a book. You know, I read Canfield's book about coup d'etat in America. I'm not saying it was the greatest book on assassination, but it revealed things to me like, holy crap, if they exactly what you just said, if they can do this, if somebody out there can change our democracy, can remove a head of state, then nobody's safe. You get that fear of where we are, you know? And I think all of us at some point reach that epiphany, and that's what motivates us, right, to get to that truth. You know, what keeps us in it? What's kept me in it, I guess, right?
Yeah, and like you were saying earlier, that it's surprising that there are new things. Like, a few people asked me, you're doing your radio show still? Oh, you know, well, what do you talk about? I said, you'd be surprised that there's a new book, there's a new documentary, there's something out, there's a film, and there is new information coming out. And, oh, yeah. Pleasantly surprised. Yeah, and a conference like yours is where people will come to disseminate that. So here's what I've discovered. You know, like I was mentioning Angleton, and you're talking about, you know, all these different people, more information's coming out. And it might be that, you know, they passed away, but their wife has told something. Or they had a brother that said, I hate to tell you this, but, you know, my brother told me on his deathbed, you know,
yeah,
he was in Dallas. Yeah.
There's, you know, I think it speaks of the complication of the event, that it wasn't just a few rogue guys that got together here. Okay, I mean the amount of information and different things that point in different directions suggest no, this was bigger than just a few rogue guys who decided to take out the president. And that fact has led, you know, to us to look in and uncover a lot of elements to this, a lot of layers that are in fact there, I think, that need to be explored. But, you know, for a lot of folks, it's like, you know, what's the genesis of all this, right? I think that's where a lot of us have arguments, you know, about where did this all start? Did it start with the CIA at the top? Was it a few rogue agents? Was it the CIA mob plot? Was it the United States military? Was it folks down in Texas who hated Kennedy, who wanted to see Lyndon Johnson be president of the United States? I mean, and maybe the answers are kind of all the above, you know, in terms of all these layers and things to look at and to look at different directions.
Well, yeah, that old line, you know, the enemy of my enemy is a friend, and as a group of people who you'd think wouldn't get together. But yeah, when the CIA has an agent, a cutout, and he talks to some organized crime guy, and it says, hey, we need you, right? Okay, yeah. What can I do to help? And,
well, that's,
you know, Fletcher,
when you talk about Johnny Roselli and his connection to the CIA, which is, I think, an important element of all this. I mean,
right. Well, somebody had to call Jack Ruby, right?
Yeah. You know, yeah. Well,
but Fletcher Prouty had mentioned to me several times, you know, and he was trying to make a point to me, the most important letter in the CIA is the last letter A. It's an agency. And if you think about a lawyer working for a client, if this is an agency, who's this working for? Because, you know, we assume it's the government of America. But if it's higher than the Defense Department, it's for these generals and guys that were in Sullivan, Cromwell, Allen Dulles, the big business of America. If that's who they work for, you know, they don't care what president comes and goes. They have an agenda.
You mentioned Fletcher Prouty. I want to bring something up as another little new thing that I've been looking at, and others have as well. And that's the potential military connection or interconnection with the CIA. Fletcher Prouty, I'll quote him, once said that a small counterintelligence outfit known as ACSI, A-C-S-I, which is the the name I always, I just call them AXI, Small Intent Counterintelligence Outfit, that was created by the United States military in 1960. Prouty said that AXI was the black arm of military intelligence for the United States military. And what we found is in some of the new documents is the interconnectivity between this small counterintelligence unit and the CIA. In fact, multiple people that I've looked at were actually both CIA and AXI both. And this agency, we've come across documentation that this agency was actually proposing assassinating Fidel Castro. They put it on paper. So we know how extreme they were. We know the interconnectivity with the CIA. We also know that one of the members of AXI, named Dorothy Matlack, was tracking in the late 1950s defectors to the Soviet Union. We also know that Matlack and others met with one George Demornshield in April of 1963, who just happened to be Oswald's handler. So I'm kind of giving you some other stuff here that I've come across, but that just shows you the layers out there that you can move in and look at and are intriguing, I think.
Yeah,
I
and
don't
it
know.
takes maybe a seasoned researcher to even recognize something's afoot there, where when you first get into the case, you've watched the Oliver Stone film, you know who Jim Garrison is, and you realize, okay, Commission Exhibit 399. Well, that didn't do anything. And then you like you said, you try to figure out what association of people really got together and said that guy's got to go.
Yeah, that is the hard part, and that's where a lot of the speculation lies. But as I've always said, what are we left to do but speculate? Have we ever had a legitimate investigation into the JFK assassination? You know the answer to that. No. So not having a legitimate investigation, we're just left to that, what you mentioned, and that ad hoc research by independent historians, researchers. This is what we have.
Concerned citizens, yeah.
Yeah, concerned citizens.
And then you find out, like from Mike Benz and other people who have looked into the USAID, that they have had people that are funding, like the McAdams and the Posners and the disinfo, and they're well paid to sit there and write every which way the thing could have never happened, but they just quote it happened, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's a that's a lesson because, if you go on, again, the current event type thing, but you go on social media today and the flood of disinformation is just breathtaking. The lies and disinformation.
That's a great, I'm gonna have to quote you. It's breathtaking.
I mean, it's just like, and that kind of, in some ways, even before the advent of the internet, the CIA was fomenting that disinformation from those folks like you just talked about. They were already, it was the kind of the forerunner to the massive amounts of disinformation we're confronted with today. But yeah, it's always been there with the JFK assassination now, hasn't it?
Well, that's one of the things that kind of keeps me going too, because I'm just flabbergasted. You see, you go the poverty of this. Imagine the money you're spending in this to whitewash and cover up a way of life that is supposed to be our way of life is better than theirs or whatever. No, it isn't at all, and it's worse. And people, like, oh, we can't let communism flourish in Cuba. Now we have to surround Cuba again. What are these sanctions on, like, what has that island done to you? I says, well, it's the enemy of capitalism. We got to keep capitalism going everywhere. We can't let them flourish, because if they flourish, it'll take over and it'll move to South America, and before you know it, right?
Yeah, Trump's kind of taking us back to the 1950s on that one, isn't he? It's like we're circling back to some of the. It's not the shiny new object, Lynn. It's the shiny old object, right?
Yeah,
Communism.
yeah. And the real shame is, Trump, love him or hate him, you could say Trump, 1.0 is kind of like Begrudgingly, I don't mind that, but now with everything he's, the Ukraine war, I'll fix that in 24 hours. You wait and see, right? You know, no more new wars. The budget is $1.5 trillion. Defense Department. I mean, you guys are writing checks for, you can't even afford the paper you're writing the checks on. But anyway, I don't want to get into that. I want to talk about the JFK conference you're having. And like I said, a group of like-minded people hopefully will show up. And also, if you're interested in what's new, and what you're saying is you don't invite the lone nutters. You invite a few people that everyone may not agree with, but generally, they're all there doing an honest effort. And you hope people show up for that.
Yeah, I think the common notion is we're like-minded in terms of the fact we know that Oswald didn't do it, that there was a conspiracy, that there was something bigger involved. And from there, we can get different perspectives, and we try to bring those out down in Dallas. And I would invite everybody to take careful consideration to coming. Also, if you can't make it, we will be offering a Zoom option as well. And that's also on the website if anybody's interested in that. Two different ways to take advantage of that situation that we're having down in Dallas. November 19th through 22nd.
2026, and I will make links to that, and I'll make links to any other updates that you send me between now and then.
Terrific.
Very good. Well, just tell me, this isn't your first time. How many conferences and things have you been working on? I think quite a few.
Well, this will be our fifth year running it down in Dallas.
Didn't you do somewhere also in the Midwest?
Yeah, I probably have had three major conferences here on my campus at Olney Central College in Illinois, two major conferences in Washington, D.C., we did one down in Memphis, associated with the historian down there with the MLK Museum in 23. So we've done a couple in Kansas City. We've been all over the country.
I know. I just wanted to say hats off to you because it takes an awful lot to put something together.
Yeah, it does. It's a
and,
lot of work.
A lot of times you're lucky if you break even. We hope to break even. And so that's why I just wanted to make sure that I had you on to help promote this. Like I say, look at the list of speakers, agree or disagree, but you know, when somebody's doing good work, I just like to make sure hopefully you sell out.
And yeah, we pretty much had a full house the last several years, close to it, and we're expecting that again. There are obviously plenty of availability for those who want to sign up, but we're expecting a good turnout. We also get a pretty good local turnout too.
Yeah, that was one thing I had heard on a few other things they had. Because you're a professor, you've got so many students that may, you know, say, I'm going to that.
Well, I actually do bring I usually bring between 6 and 10 students with me down to Dallas. We kind of raise some money, and I kind of recruit kids that might be interested in history to come down and be a part of the conference. It's kind of gives us a kind of a youthful aspect too. In fact, I'm even toying with the idea now of possibly having some of my students make a presentation themselves down in Dallas. We're going to probably try to pull that off, have them do a little research and present to folks there as part of the program, which should be interesting. Another little aspect of things we're trying to do.
Okay, David, before we wrap up then, is there anything you would like to bring up I didn't get to yet?
No, I think we've done a great job, but we have to talk about some topics and also the folks that are going to be presenting information on when it is. And again, jfkhistorical.com. It's really easy. Or just put JFK Historical Group, and you'll go right to the website. Hit the conference tab link at the top, gives you all the information. There's also a couple articles I have that I mentioned, talked about today, if you're interested in reading some new stuff. So I invite everybody to check out the website and possibly entertain the idea of coming down to Dallas in November. It is a great time, Lynn. Would encourage people to consider it, okay?
Okay, good. Yeah, possibly I'll have you on again just before to do a little secondary push, but hopefully you're sold out and you get a lot of people tuning in over the web.
Okay. Well, thank you. All right.
All right. Thank you very much for your time today.
All right.
And congratulations on all these conferences. I know how tough it could be.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.